Hi, everyone. I am Sarah Edmondson, and I'm here with...
Hi, I'm Anthony Ames, Sarah's husband, a.k.a. Nippy.
And we're here to talk about things that are
a little bit culty.
Speaking of, we were in a cult, and we woke up, thank goodness, and we have a lot to say.
And a lot to ask.
This podcast is going to be a deep dive into everything from the red flags to the narcissism, the manipulation, the resiliency, the recovery process, and everything in between. Also, we want to share some of the good we got out of it so you can get all the nuggets without having to join a cult.
If you haven't already, because there are a lot of things out there that are just a little bit culty.
Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, a podcast about the fads, beliefs, and trends that blur the line between healthy and a little bit culty. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And find us on Instagram if you have any suggestions for things you have found to be a little bit culty. Under the surface, the water fills my lungs. This ground I worship has swallowed up its young. And you give for a promise. Hi, everybody.
Hey, everyone.
It's Sarah here with my husband, Nippy. Thanks for subscribing and for tuning in today to the very first official episode of
A Little Bit Culty.
Also, since you aren't here, you can't see, Nippy is looking so dapper. He's also wearing a Guns N' Roses t-shirt because today is...
Axl Rose's birthday.
Because the thing is like, y'all got a good sense of who Nippy is from The Vow.
And if you watch The Vow.
If you watch The Vow and you know, how what a great husband he is. But you don't really know the nuances of his personality, which are very...
You don't really need to, maybe.
No, but I want people to know. I want people to know that, like, he can rock a Guns N' Roses t-shirt on the weekend. And a lot of people wanted to know, before we get into, like, all the juicy stuff, why is Nippy called Nippy? And I'm going to let you tell that story, babe, because I feel like that's you.
It's somewhat underwhelming, but I'll give it a go, because I've had to do this before, believe it or not. Full name, Anthony Nippert, N-I-P-P-E-R-T, Ames. Nippert is my mom's maiden name. Her name is Isitra Nippert. And my dad is Anthony Ames. So they went Anthony Nippert Ames and thought it would be a good idea to call me Nippy, which was it's good for until about second or third grade. And it turns pretty hard on you at a certain point.
Yeah.
But I was also kind of buffered because my brother's names.
Were.
Which are Huey, Dewey, Louie, and I have a little sister named Daisy. So it was like Huey, Nippy, Louie, and Dewey. So I was kind of lumped in with a whole other names, and I kind of like kind of got a little bit of hall pass because my brother's names were the Ducks. And Nippy never really got, I mean, you know, the obvious jokes that went with Nippy, Nipple, like, you know, I get it, you know, but nothing really.
I try to call him
nothing.
Anthony. I really do.
Nobody's really made fun of my name successfully since the 80s. Really? It's never. I'm just like, I get it.
But you get used to it.
Yeah.
It's like the smell in a Bikram's yoga class.
I don't know if my name's akin to that per se.
Speaking of Bikram, we're going to talk about that in one of our episodes.
Great segue.
We are going to also give you a little lowdown about what we're planning on doing with this podcast, what we're going to cover.
And some guidelines. I think it's important to have some guidelines. And while we're at it, can I go ahead and read those to you?
Yeah.
I do think this is important. When we talk about what we're going to talk about, we're going to wax serious. We're probably going to have two gears here. Goofy and then pretty serious. So it's pretty heavy stuff. I think it's fun to come at it from an angle of a little more humor.
Which is necessary for our healing, don't you think?
Yes.
A lot of laughter.
Yes. Yeah. Laughter is.
But that's where we are in our healing. And for some people with this topic, it's not always funny, especially at first.
A lot of people have been hurt by one particular person, Keith Raniere. And a lot of people at different, very different stages in different cases. And we want to be sensitive to everyone that has shrapnel in them from this situation. So my first rule is no shit talk.
Yeah, we're not here to put anybody
down. Don't
shit
talk anyone. It's just, they don't need it. They don't need to be banged on any more than they probably are doing to themselves. So, and the other is... or one of the other ones, is we want to be a voice to, I think, what 99% of the people signed up for and don't have an outlet to express that. Now, I'm not saying we're the voice for all of them, but I think most of the people, and I'd say it's up to 99% of them, got in for good reasons and haven't had their story told responsibly, you know, and that is the other one. I think I want to be as responsible as we can with our platform.
Anyway, here we are in these unprecedented times, and I thought it would just be fun to warm up because we've never done this before, and this is so cool that we have.
You've
this
done part. This more than me.
Well, no, we've never done this before together.
Oh no, no,
no! This is like our no, first time.
This is definitely our first time on a podcast. You can probably figure that out.
Anything else you want to update with before the questions?
I guess what and why we're doing the podcast for. Who we're going to be interviewing. We have a good list of that. And
experts, survivors, whistleblowers.
And the kind of episodes you can expect. So there's going to be episodes with experts. We're still coining a term for the people that escaped. We don't like calling them victims, per
survivors.
Se. Survivors. I like calling them winners. Sarah's not really down with that.
Yeah, it sounds a bit cheesy to me. But I don't know. They're winners. They're winners. They got out.
So there's going to be those types of guests. And then there's going to be another kind of podcast episode where we're going to go into the modules of the curriculum and really take apart what was interesting, what appealed to people about the modules, and how those things can be used to manipulate you.
And what was good about it? Like, what you know, we want to share what was good about each module and also how, you know, what was bad about it, which is what Nippy said. That's the manipulative part.
So imagine those will have more questions after we do them. Anyway, that's going to be one avenue. And then that's the structure.
I want to also say really quickly how this sort of came to be, which was that we were contacted by Citizens of Sound, who makes podcasts, and the wife of the duo team there basically said, we saw The Vow and we think you should do a podcast. And that was, there was more to it than that. But our first response was like, oh my God, there's so many podcasts out there. And, you know, we've told our story. And then I casually put it out there on one of my Instagram stories, asking if people thought that we should, or if there's an appetite for that. And the response was overwhelming with what you all want to know more about and, you know, what they'd like to hear from us. So, you know, Nippy and I are, like we said in the intro, we're the kinds of people who've always wanted to help. We bet on the wrong horse, and this is the next step. So we hope that this helps, whatever content we create in the next 12 or so episodes.
Well, if we do it well, we just take our wisdom and put it into content and people will understand what it is if they want to, you know, if we articulate it well.
I hope so.
So that's our aim. If we articulate, you know, how these things happen and you can put it into some sort of relatable context in your own life, then I think we've done a good job.
Yeah, exactly. And we just to wrap, circle back. We chose.
You just circled back on
to
me.
Circle back. we chose Citizens of Sound because they related to our experience because they escaped a fundamentalist church group. And so they understand. And, you know, I think most of the people that watch The Vow get it because they understood what we went through. And then every now and then there's just people who don't get it. I want to work with people who get it. So here we are.
Well, also we were just talking earlier today, how we experienced some dark unwittingly. And
it's big time dark, actually.
Yeah. Some very dark stuff. And then when we came out, we immediately started experiencing some light.
Like incredible people.
Like really great people. People always ask, you know, like, you know, how this affect you. It reaffirmed some of the things that I had already learned inside taking these classes and all that, that there's a lot of good people and most people are good. I do believe that. I do believe that that's a majority of people. And it only takes a little bit of dark to get good people to do things unwittingly. So it wasn't so much, at least for me, and I don't know if I speak for you on this, my trust had been hurt. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem with how I committed to something and my intentions, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think you did either. You know, it was how I committed and how I went about things really wasn't what I struggled with. It was just getting duped and conned.
Mm-hmm. That's been a hard pill to swallow.
And just, and being so wrong was the most, like, I call it solar plex. When you feel it in your solar plex and you feel sick to your stomach, it's that kind of.
How long did that last for you? Like 6 weeks or something?
I don't know. It's like a bad breakup.
Yeah.
Right? You wake up at 3 a.m, you know.
It does last for a while.
I had two waves of it too. Mm-hmm. Like I had an initial wave of it and then I went into sniper mode sniper mode. I was in protect family mode. Mm-hmm. And it's just different. When it feels like you're in danger, there's just a lower, I can feel it in the back of my brain. Mm-hmm. I can feel it when I wake up. Like I was in a mode of head on a swivel. When Keith got arrested, mm-hmm. I felt a little better about it. And then I didn't really feel again the con and the pain of that till like January of 18. So we're like 6-7 months in. Mm-hmm. And then I felt it differently then.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you feel when He got 120.
I kind of felt like he was going to go away. I mean, look, that doesn't feel good on any like mm-hmm. human level. Just the fact that that goes on doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. But I felt it was justice.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel vindicated?
No, I mean, I didn't need that to vindicate me.
We already knew.
Yeah, I need that to vindicate
me. And where are you now?
These are your questions? You just sneak them on
just
me?
Did you just circle with back just and throw some with questions? My questions. Right. Where are you now? What's
where am I now?
Yeah, the vow finished a couple months ago. We're in semi.
Well, look, I mean,
COVID lockdown. Where
I was never comfortable with that whole having the camera on me and all that stuff. I also felt like we didn't tell our story. Someone else was mm-hmm. going to tell it, and probably I don't think as responsibly at times. You know, I mean, I'm not saying we're the definitive.
But the vow
story.
The vow told our story, or that segment of our story. Yeah. It's still going, right?
Yeah. No, we got lucky. I mean,
we met amazing people over the last few years. You're right. The light compensated. And I think that's ultimately where, to recap, where I think we are as a family now is that we've had to keep going back to what's positive from this. What can I pull from this that's good? So that, I mean, if you stay in that dark place, it's just too hard on your psyche and your soul.
Turning a negative into a positive. But, look, I hate to ask you this, but
ask me. Come on, just bring it on.
This is for the fans, Sarah. This isn't for me.
Okay.
But the only reason I'm asking this is because I've seen it like 5 times. Did Keith ever try and hit on Sarah?
Oh my God.
I know. I feel like I went to like first grade, but
okay.
Let's get the salacious shit out of the way.
Let's get this crap out of the way.
And then get into like the real shit.
This answer has got it's like a 3-part answer.
They also asked if they hit on me,
that's a dumb question. No, sorry. There's no dumb questions. You can ask us whatever you want. Okay. So
no, that's a dumb question.
At first I thought, no, I'm like, why didn't he hit? If he had this harem, why didn't he hit on me? Then I found out when I left and I talked to the other women that he was with that got out, because as you know, some people remain true believers. That's not how he doesn't hit on people overtly. He actually sets it up quite brilliantly to make it look like you're approaching him. And how he does that is he has people around him, like his, you know, inner circle, getting these young women to ask him for his time, to say, would you please, you know, are you free for a walk? The first thing was often, well, even before that, you're supposed to go to Albany, you're supposed to come to volleyball. And I think that of the people that came to volleyball, in other words, people who traded their sleep to spend their time in a cold gymnasium to maybe have a personal encounter with the Vanguard himself, got passed like almost a test. And truthfully, I think I went to volleyball less than 5 times in my entire 12 years there. Maybe more at the beginning because I was more of a keener. But eventually I was like, I need to sleep. I'm paying $7,000 for this training.
Yeah, don't mess with your sleep.
I don't. Yeah, Nippy knows. I'm a high maintenance sleeper. I've got earplugs. I've got a head mask thing.
Dude, you sleep
sometimes
like
a mouth guard.
You sleep like a mummy.
And like with pillows, 6 pillows. Right? I surround myself in pillows. And like, anyway. So
it's a cloud, really.
Well, the next thing they would have said, I'm attached to my comfort. Oh, and that's what they would say. What does it mean, Sarah, if you're choosing your comfort over spending time with Keith? And I'm like, well, it means I like my sleep. Anyway, doesn't matter. So I didn't go to volleyball, but I was encouraged to ask him for time going for walks. And I believe I went for 2 walks with him again over my 12 years. There's women there who went for walks with him almost every day. So anyway, I never had that time with him, but I now looking back, I feel like I just didn't jump through the hoops that would have brought me closer to him, which is when he apparently made his move. He would bring you to Albany, you know, or you'd go to Albany, you'd have a walk with him. He'd start a new company. He'd invite you to build that company. He'd start mentoring you. And then at some point he would offer to coach you through, and this is according to the other women, like through their issues by means of a personal relationship with him. But it would have to be private. Like you weren't to share that or speak of it to anyone. Like the women didn't tell the other women about it. So.
Also, you were busy recruiting.
Yeah. I think at a certain point, you left me alone.
Also like when we would go home, we'd work. Like,
yeah.
And then when we had a kid, it was like.
When we had a kid, I was more off the radar. But in retrospect, no. So like, yes and no. No, he didn't hit on me. Was he trying to? I believe so. Yes. And then that was confirmed when the trial was going on last year. And Lauren shared that Keith was excited that she had locked me down to a lifetime commitment and told her, remember this? Should I say this in the podcast?
No. I mean, you know,
whatever.
You're going to hold back now?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, Lauren said in the trial, Keith was excited that she had secured me and my commitment and said to her, do you know that if you tell her that she has to have sex with another man, she has to comply? And Lauren said, yes. Now, of course, I didn't know anything about that until the trial, and that sort of brought things full circle for me. But
trial was as horrifying for us as it was for people finding out.
But I think he was trying to break us up. I mean, that makes sense.
No,
put
look,
his initials
I mean,
on my body.
get a level of this guy's psychopathy. Is that the word? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The way our organization described what a quote integration was, or what an EM did, is basically just to build more self-awareness. But the way they described it was inductive and deductive experience. And the difference between inductive and deductive is inductive is more experiential. Like if I'm going to teach you tennis, do I give you the manual or do I give you lessons? Inductive would be getting the lessons. Deductive would be getting a manual on how to play tennis. So what they claimed that an integration did was is you would have a piece of information be presented to you. And normally it was after someone asked you a question that would integrate your belief system with your past, and you would then have an understanding of why you did certain behaviors. So the way an integration worked in the movie The Sixth Sense, and this is a spoiler alert, but there's a part at the end of the movie where you recognize Bruce Willis had been dead.
Oh, wait, hold on. Can I jump on this?
Go, circle back.
Sorry, I'm tangenting. So in the movie, and they would even explain this during intro presentations, do you remember how you feel throughout the movie? You're like, what's going on here? This is, I don't understand. And the very end, you get one piece of information. What's the one thing you didn't know the whole time that you find out at the end?
Bruce Willis has been dead the whole time.
Right. And then we would ask, now how does it feel to find out that Bruce Willis is dead?
Almost, I'd say 7 to 8 times out of 10, the person would say, you go back and you recapitulate everything.
Recapitulate
everything with new eyes.
And every scene looks different.
Every scene looks different.
Oh, that's why she's not looking at him. She can't see him.
Right.
He's a ghost.
So the idea is you're going to get a piece of information that's going to help you recognize that there was a blind spot in your decision-making, you know, your whole life. And that is called an integration. And that goes through an experiential thing. So I think the con, and this isn't giving him credit so much for being a genius or smart, because a lot of people have a lot of pride going like, he's smart because I would never fall for that. And that's a whole nother, that'll be in a podcast, that kind of psychology that is human. We all have. But one of the things that I think's interesting about it, and he gave us that example, because I think when we left the organization, you had that piece of information that Keith was a con man the whole time. That's kind of a sixth sense moment.
Cause you go back.
And I think that's what he was consciously setting up for people to have. I conned you. You're going to see it, and you're going to recapitulate, and there's nothing you can do about it.
You're going to go back and replay every scene.
You're going to see what a psychopath I am, but no one else is going to see it until it's too late.
Until it's too late. It's too late.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org.
But essentially, like, if you look into the level of a psychopath, like, I guess there's the good ones are the ones that are the most patient.
Good in terms of being able to being destroy good at more
it.
Things.
Well, they studied it, right? They understand, like, you know, so, and I think that's what he did. And so, and we were none the wiser.
But
and
the moment when you
realize that happened, that's a sixth sense moment almost, because you go back and you go, fuck, this is true. This is true.
All
it's
the media.
In the news.
All the media that we thought was a smear campaign, all of it.
So you go back and look at the years that you were in and loyal with the new set of eyes. They hide in plain sight. Bob Dylan song about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man of Peace, where they just basically could be your local policeman, mm-hmm. could be your local priest. These things are out there. They're dark.
I'm just a little bit culty.
A lot culty. Anyway, so not to get too morose, but that's going to be the theme of what we're getting into.
Do you feel like you, Nippy, after all this, are better at spotting manipulation?
I think the kind of manipulation that I experienced, I know to ask questions differently. You saw me go back and forth in this whole political thing. What's going on last year? Like, I'm definitely like, I kick the tires differently now.
Yeah.
My new set of eyes.
A lot of people ask us what, you know, what we think about what's happening politically. And we'll do an episode about that.
Are you still friends with people from NXIVM?
I'm friends with the people that were good friends most of them were friends before, lifetime friends. The friends that I met in Nexium, there's just a few that I managed to salvage those relationships. It's really hard to maintain healthy friendships once you've been through a toxic, abusive ranking system where the people above you are there to gently abuse you towards your growth.
And also, like, we were in that hierarchy too.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you can find some people
who don't like us, you know?
Yeah.
And
we're villain in someone's stories, and maybe rightfully so. And we're some of them. Like, yeah. I mean, we weren't overtly.
But we've tried pretty hard to try to find those people and fix things.
Yeah. That's what this is about. Would you talk to Lauren and Nancy Salzman? And for those of you who don't know that's Lauren and Nancy Salzman from The Vow. Not from The Vow, from Nexium, and they're mentioned in The Vow. Lauren was a daughter of the president, Nancy Salzman, and we worked with them. I know a lot of people ask you about them. How do you feel about that?
I think it's changed drastically over the past 3 years. I went from being incredibly angry and felt so hurt and betrayed by both. And since, you know, time passed and doing a lot of introspection and healing and all the work post-cult, I feel like they both need to be held accountable, but in my emotionality, I forgive them. I don't feel anger towards them anymore. I hope they can get some semblance of a life back, because I don't think anyone signed up for this. I think they got their heads got fucked with too.
Do you see them as victims as well?
As well. Yeah, absolutely. They weren't planning on being, I don't even know what you call that. What were they? They end up being co-conspirators in a sex trafficking case. Hold on. Is that the actual proper term? Unless I said it wrong.
Pimp. Is actual the term. They ended up pimping him
yeah. for him.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross, but yeah, no, I would talk to them. I would like to talk to Lauren. Actually, it's one day when all of this is over and just have closure. It's important for me to have closure with people. And
explain that. Cause I don't have, that. I don't have that. I don't feel that way.
Well, it's like if we have an argument or something and you're going to leave to drop Tori off at school, I don't feel comfortable with you leaving until we're good. Even if it's like,
I'm your husband. I didn't enroll you into a sex cult.
No, I know.
There's a big difference.
I know, but there's a feeling I have of, I don't like to leave something where there's unresolved anything. I like things to be at least acknowledged. It doesn't have to mean we're best friends, but for me, closure would be, you know, an apology. I just want to hear things from her side. I want to know what went behind the scenes as we did our thing and as we exited.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, I'd watch it if it was on video.
You don't want to talk to her.
I kind of
just want a face to face. Like, honestly, it's weird. I kind of want to hug her. Do I have Stockholm syndrome? Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, look, I mean, I can frame it for you like this and you can take it for what it's worth. They saw who he was and kept it from us. And we made major life decisions because they kept the true nature of who Keith Raniere was from us.
I totally agree.
That fucked us.
Yeah, it did. So, it totally did. And I get that.
And they took their psychology that they professed to be this altruistic kind of loving thing and used it to want to see us in jail. And if they had it their way, we would have been in jail and they would have had no fucking problem doing that.
They protected him. I still think because their heads had been fucked with that, they were protecting him for good reason. They were doing the ethical thing to protect him because people wouldn't understand about his lifestyle. That's what they were led to believe, right? So it's not that I think that's wrong. I think that's totally wrong.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They didn't sign up going, hey, we'd like to be part of this personal development group and you're going to lie about the leader so that he can funnel in young women for his sexual deviant practices. Like, they weren't like, oh yeah, that sounds great. You know, none of us signed up for it.
Yeah,
it happened,
I guess,
in stages.
Yeah, I get it. I know. I mean, I'm mad at them for being more susceptible than something I was susceptible to.
I
can get around that. I mean,
one day you'll be as compassionate as me, babe.
Yeah, I hope so.
Oh.
No, but my point, to me, in my psychology, I'm still like, I can't give that anymore of my life force. And maybe that'll change, you know? I mean, it doesn't mean I don't look at them and go and feel badly for their situation.
I guess what I'm saying about me for my life force is that it actually takes less life force because I have this level of forgiveness. And it's just not, I'm just so much more evolved.
You know what? Touche.
Right? Do you know what I mean though? Like, just let it, it's part of, for me, it's been part of my healing.
Yeah.
I get where you're at and you'll catch up. And that's just, you know, this is what Nippy does to me all the time.
I love that. Your voodoo just
got him back.
That was some good kung fu right there.
Oh, it's okay. Thank you. This is actually a question that came in today, which I think is great. Somebody asked, what was the culture of sex and the whole poly thing that came out about Keith's lifestyle?
Oh.
And were the men winking and looking the other way because they wanted a piece of that pie too? And
it's from a friend of ours.
Yeah. And so he wanted to know that. And, you know, I was thinking, you know what? It's changed a lot over the 12 years. But at the beginning, it was like a really boring environment
it's
sexually.
Vanilla.
It was super vanilla.
It was vanilla.
Like, it seemed like people weren't having sex because...
We didn't know how unvanilla it was.
Yeah. But it's I thought it was like, wow, there's nobody's in couples here. And everyone's like monkish. And
I have a great story to put in context.
Yeah.
Okay. The story I have that can address that, just to give you an idea. When the center was in Union Square, so this must have been 2010, 2011, there was basically three to four of us that ran the New York City Center. And it was mostly another friend of mine and I who taught the classes. And there was a woman in the class that he came to me one day and he said, I don't think it's okay that I'm teaching her classes and running her goals program, her goals aspect, because I'm attracted to her. I'm interested in her. So could you teach her classes? And so that's the level of awareness of...
And this is somebody he got married
to. He ended up marrying her. He ended up asking her out, going through a whole process of like, you know, it was very professional. And the reason we had a conversation about it, he's like, I don't think, you know, when people come here to work on themselves, they should have an instructor hitting on them. So that was something that was self-governed, you know, away from Albany. Meanwhile, back in Albany, you know.
And then we found out later in the trial, they were having threesomes over lunch hour.
So just you know? to put in context, like, you know, that was really the atmosphere we thought we were cultivating. Right?
No pun intended. It's supposed to be very mindful. We were taught like there's certain things that people do in trainings to cover up their issues. They eat, they smoke, they flirt. So we were to be very careful about that. And
My point is just to give you an example of how like people in Keith's orbit were thinking in a way of like what's appropriate. They're being mindful, and he was the least mindful and least appropriate of everyone in the entire lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty fucking crazy to me.
Yeah. Somebody had said that it looked like we're having so much fun in one of the videos, but like it was kind of boring in that way.
This is the whole thing, right? Like the closer to Keith it was, the more fucked up it was. And if you were someone who lived in Mexico City, LA, Vancouver, and there's even New York City, there's a center there where you go and you bring your goals weekly. And it was benign, even boring.
So no, there was not a culture of sex and polyamory and swinging or anything.
But that's what makes the headlines. That's what makes the news. I understand that. But no, for 99% of the people, it's, you know, that's not what it was.
Mm-hmm. So somebody asked what our relationship now is with personal development. And I know for me, I find it very difficult to, just the whole.
I think the assumption there is, would you do it? And are you...
Well, what do I think about it? Like in general, I feel like that there is just a lot of people who aren't trained properly in the field and collecting money and maybe have bad intentions. It's just the whole thing's kind of gross to me, to be honest. But I'm, you know, maybe down the road, I'll be able to get more into it. And that's something we will talk about a lot in this podcast is when you're doing a workshop like that. Like when does it feel like, is it a group? Are you discussing personal things? Oh my God, it's just like in the movie the docuseries The Vow. It must be a cult. It might not be. There's lots of great workshops out there, but how do you determine between that feels a little culty to me too, like, ooh, this is a cult, run.
Can measure it. I mean, that's hopefully what we're gonna map out, right? Like there are quantifiable things and things that we can all agree upon when something's about to go south.
Mm-hmm.
Or it has bad intent behind it. I think to answer the previous question, I can spot that.
Yeah. We're going to go through a whole list. We are going to talk about very specific red flags in all contexts, not just personal development seminars, but anything that may be culty. What are the things to look out for? Of course, we probably have time for like one or two more questions.
So here's just the gestalt of them. How did your personal relationship with each other change? Did it change after ESP? Did you have to get to know each other all over again?
Let's answer those.
I mean, I think the overall, like, the three or four of these questions I can answer kind of all at once. And I've said this before, I married your character. And, you know, throughout this whole thing, I've seen it be what I thought it was the entire time, except when you bust my balls a little bit. I mean, you know, I give you a hall pass there and sometimes I deserve it. And I think if that's it's like a family member. If that's the foundation of your relationship and it's tested and it survives, it's going to be stronger. Here's the thing with this question too. It's interesting. We both got hit with the same incident at the same time, right? And had to go through what we had to go through at the same time. And we made a lot of really good decisions in a short amount of time that I don't think you and I could have done without each other. And we played our roles really, really well and trusted the right people. And that even got strengthened. And we're raising two kids at the same time.
In a pandemic.
In a pandemic, which has actually been a blessing.
For us.
Yeah. And then we turned it into that.
Yeah.
Kicked it off with a little Tiger King and the Michael Jordan's Last Dance. And that was, quarantine was off and running.
I mean, we probably had the rest and the reconciliation as a family in terms of like reconnecting. But truthfully, it was what we needed because we were so like, Nippy calls me a gerbil on speed. And then when we left, we were working with the same tenacity and the same fervor. And then we never took a break. And so when COVID hit, it was like, okay, we don't have to audition. We don't have to fight. We're not going to have to go to New York for any more legal stuff. It's just, we can just chill. And it was good for us, I think.
Universe provided.
Yeah. And I don't want to like echo everything you just said, but one thing I will add about us is that, and I agree, I also married Nippy for his character and his principles and his values and his, of course, handsome good looks.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
obviously.
I think you have to say that. I mean, they know that, Sarah.
What do you say, Dip? It's just
go
science.
Go on.
It's just science.
You were saying?
But I also, you know, there were lots about him that I didn't know. And I think when we got out, what we did have to do was, and we're still doing, is getting to know each other. We never actually got a honeymoon together because we
scheduled our wedding around trainings.
Yeah. The only date we could have our wedding was the day there was no other trainings in the company so that, you know, Nancy and the higher ranks could attend, Nancy and Lauren.
It's a red flag.
That was a red flag.
It's a bright red flag.
We didn't have time for a honeymoon. There was no time. That would have been satiative, which was an ESP executive success program's word for being like too indulgent, essentially, to satiate in something like a honeymoon.
We should do an episode where we just go through like the gaslighting techniques.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we're going to do a podcast where we go on a honeymoon. No. Let's do both. We'll do a honeymoon podcast.
There's no fucking way.
What? You don't want to go on a honeymoon?
No, I want to go. Don't put words in my mouth. Okay. I'm not doing a podcast or anything. What I got more into, what you and all your girlfriends are doing, like with the spiritual stuff, mm-hmm. which I just, Sarah knows, dude, like The Secret, like and all that stuff. I used to just make fun of like.
I'm not promoting The Secret, just so you know.
Well, and I don't want to shit talk. That was one of my things, but I did some of it. And I also coupled it with some of like the reading I was doing, David Hawkins and that sort of thing. And, it really got me open to and kind of willing to see certain things that I would just dismiss before. And I started looking at that whole world. I was like, what is the downside of just at least knowing about it? And signs, manifesting, shit like that fucking works.
I never thought I would hear this.
I know, dude. I'm eating my humble pie again.
He even lets me light some sage and smudge it around him if he's in a bad mood.
I'm down with sage.
It smells good.
It's not bad. It's like a campfire. And like coming back to your apartment, it smells like a campfire. I'm down with it. Campfire is a good smell. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it like cleanses my shit or anything like that, but.
Oh, it does.
Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet, but I like it.
Anyway.
Our indoctrinations were different. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a training in 2001. I wasn't really there for an actual training in personal growth. The person that enrolled me was a friend of mine from high school and I used to date, right? So I went kind of kicking and screaming. I told that person I would never do their cult before I went in it, right? That was my response to it. Went and did it. Keith spoke in my first training. I happened to have been reading a book called The Death of Outrage by Bill Bennett at the time. And that was about primarily Bill Clinton and the scandal he had with Monica Lewinsky. And I was probably 26 at the time. And decided to take a training, and the training was talking about like how we had poor leaders, how we could have a better world. So that was kind of where my hook was. Mm-hmm. It was more of like, dude, I agree with a lot of this stuff. And at 20, my late 20s or whatever it was, I just thought that was ridiculous that stuff was going on in the White House. So it kind of came on the heels of me thinking that. And then that was the first time I met Keith. I did a forum. Then I went to volleyball, right, for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he presented himself like a dirty laundry bag. I mean, he was dressed literally like a dirty laundry bag and the knee pads. And when I went up and spoke to him and had kind of a one-on-one, his personality kind of was like a dirty laundry bag. It wasn't much. I was like, all right. You know, I was super underwhelmed, but I had seen him speak about in the forum. So he still had a little bit of credibility and he was being endorsed and love bombed by everyone else. I thought, okay, you know, hall pass with the, you know, 70s porn star look, and slowly was involved. And I was involved for like a year and a half. And then I left in 2003.
And why'd you come back?
Well, first of all, why I left is because I didn't think Vanguard sashes and bowing were going to catch on. And there wasn't leadership there. I didn't think anyone was going to get this thing to grow. So I left, and I wasn't like, fuck you, when I left. I was just like, cool, peace out. You guys do the Vanguard sashes thing. The Forbes article had an effect. And I was like, I see the optics of this. The Bronfman thing never really felt
right
to me. Mm-hmm. But they were fine, and they didn't have a problem with it. So I didn't, if they weren't upset, why should I be upset, was kind of my thing. And then I leave. And then in 2006, Mark Vicente invites me back to do a film. So I was invited back for work. I didn't go back because I felt like I want to make this mission work. So it was an interesting thing because most people had indoctrination. Mine was, I left because I didn't think it would work. And when I came back, it was working.
And also you were invited to do a film, which yes. you were pursuing at the time.
Right. I was in LA at the time. But my point is when I came back, the organization was different. Yeah. My opinion of it in 2003, of it not catching on and working, was proven wrong.
Yeah, you thought, oh, it could work.
I was like, oh, shit, this can work.
Right.
That was, you know, my kind of indoctrination. And I think people's indoctrination is case by case, right?
Absolutely. Well, but also the thing that's the same is that he dangled people's dreams
and
got them to come, you know, to Albany to get the thing that they...
He got Mark to dangle my dream.
Yeah.
He didn't do it.
Yes.
So he could blame Mark. And Mark did get blamed for that.
Yeah. He got people to do his work for him. He had all these flying monkeys, and they were the ones that would go and pimp for him with the dangle of the carrot of people's various goals and dreams. We have so many good stories that haven't been heard and we haven't shared anywhere else. So we can't wait to share those with you. But we also
should have anecdote time on our podcast.
Anecdote.
Just one story. I was gonna call it that, the segment of our show that we call That Really Chaps My Ass. Just one thing about NXIVM that we didn't like. You know what chapped my ass? And you can be like, what, Nippy?
You know, I'll tell you one thing that chapped my ass is that I got in trouble for bringing so many people from Vancouver who were gluten-free. And that was apparently such a strain on the budget. Nancy pulled me into her office and she said, do you know what a good recruiter you are? You recruited all these people who are gluten-free. And that's just a disintegration. Yeah, they're not gluten-free.
You know what the best part about it was? What? Is that shit got gluten-free pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
The place was gluten-free like within a year.
That did chat my ass. Yeah. I got in trouble for stupid shit. Anyway, yeah. We're so excited. We've got experts. We've got survivors. We've got whistleblowers. We've got thought leaders all lined up to tell you good stuff, good stories, and to educate. So we're going to educate. We'll have anecdotes. We're going to teach you some of the nuggets that we got. So like we said, you don't have to join a cult. And we're open to suggestions. So interact with us on Instagram and make sure to subscribe because that really helps. Apparently, we're learning. That's what we've been told. We got to ask. So please do that for us. And what else?
Yeah. Should we tease them a little bit with some of the guests that we have? Can we announce some of them?
No. It's going to be a surprise.
Oh, my God.
Think of like...
Oh, my God. We better get good at this quickly.
We
got
to get good.
Because we got some good guests coming. We need to get good at this.
Till then.
Yeah, until then, you're listening to Sarah and Nippy with...
A little bit culty.
Sinking down to the depths of the ocean. I'm hanging on to the weight of my love. If I let go of it all, I could leave. But I know. Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, the True Story of How I Escaped NXIVM, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like... take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. It takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. Additional original music is composed by Will Rutherford. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty. When you scream, sick and tired.